Chapter 22. Respect. During my teen years, I attended a school where, for reasons I haven't quite figured out, competition was a higher priority than learning. I don't mean the healthy sort of competition where better students rub elbows with marginal students to somehow bring up the pack. I mean grass in the teeth, slice your throat kind of competition. I was a straight-A student. All right, I was a straight-A plus student, and that meant that the plain old straight-A students hated me. From the normal arenas like sports, to the bizarre like who could not only memorize a poem but rattle it off the fastest without error, competition was the fuel that ran the machine. We even had regular classroom competitions to see who could find a certain page or reference in a book the fastest. And as if this in-house pressure cooker weren't enough, they also made it a practice to compete against other similarly minded schools on a regular basis. To this day, anything that smacks of organized competition still gives me the willies. Don't even get me started on child pageants. Ooh. As I said, I was a capable student, and I was fairly good at a variety of arts as well. So I was a prime target when these inter-school competitions came around. My freshman year, I was entered in 10 events: 2 piano solos, pencil art, debate, choir, vocal solo, vocal duet, monologue, persuasive speech, and spelling bee. Why did I enter so many categories? I suppose the answer is twofold: perfectionism and guilt. I'd like to say that I entered because of my love for the arts. I did not. You see, it was expressly and routinely stated in my school that, to whom much is given, much shall be required. That apparently meant that being able to do a thing obligated one to do it. If this sounds even somewhat reasonable to you, I implore you to read the chapter on saying no and to begin the unbrainwashing process immediately. Did I mention that each of these individual events took a great deal of preparation? Did I mention I was entered in 10? One day in class, as competition deadlines were nearing, my English teacher announced that we still needed an entrant for poetry recitation. He smiled as if he were going to tell a dirty joke, and looked at me. "Mr. Tyler," he said, eyebrow arched. I looked at him coolly, drawing a slow breath. "I'm already entered in 10 categories, I can't do any more." This was by no means an end to the matter, it was only a gauntlet. "Sure you can," he continued through his smug smile, his voice equally steeled. "To whom much is given." My throat felt constricted. This was a battle of wills, and there was an audience. "I'm not doing it," I said, eyes narrowing. His grin twisted and his nostrils flared like a bull ready to charge. All at once, a stick of chalk was flying, barely missing my head to break against the back wall. "Well, if you're going to have a bad attitude about it, we might as well just cancel the whole competition," he bellowed, and then stalked out of the room. It's hard to describe exactly how I felt in that moment. Exhilarated, because I stood my ground and won. Furious, unappreciated. One thing is certain, in that moment, I hated him. That was on a Friday. I spent the night at a friend's house. The phone rang. My friend went to answer it. He returned and handed it to me, mouthing with warning eyes the name of our English teacher. The wave of loathing flooded me again. How dare he call me about this, and on a weekend? And while I'm at someone else's house? This had better be an apology, I threatened mentally. "Hello," I said blankly. "Mr. Tyler." I remained silent. He continued, "You put me in a very difficult situation today. You didn't respect me." His voice was pure condescension. They say that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Well, scorned women everywhere needed to take a back seat, because a whole new level of fury was being invented as he spoke. You are going to do the poetry recitation, Mr. Tyler. I already submitted your name. You're doing Poe's The Raven. You'll do a great job with it. My friend, apparently alarmed that I had ripped through my skin and was now a disembodied homicidal inferno, took the phone. Hold on, he spoke into the receiver. Next thing I knew, my friend's father was standing near me, talking on the phone. I had gotten back into my body somehow, though the process managed to drain all the blood from it. My feet were cold. His father spoke in a gentle yet firm tone to my teacher. It was short, very short, and then he hung up the phone without further discussion. His simple words made an indelible mark on me. The best advice so far? You can't demand respect. You have to earn it. Carefully considering and then redefining terms is extremely beneficial here. Without question, you can demand some things. If you hold the proper reins of authority over someone, you can demand compliance. You can demand obedience. You can demand that certain words be spoken. You can even demand that those words be delivered with a demeanor and tone that approximates sincerity. You can punish or manipulate someone into conforming to a certain response that you prefer. But none of these things constitutes, nor fosters, respect. In fact, demanding compliance almost always results in a lack of respect. This removes all forms of, "You need to respect me," from the table. It is an invalid statement. Instead, try, "I wish you would respect me," or "I feel like you don't respect me." Those are honest communication. Better still, respect the other person by giving solid reasons rather than "because I said so" or "because I'm the boss." Let go of being able to demand respect. Instead, ask yourself, what do I need to do in order to earn this person's respect? If you're really up for a new beginning, ask them, what do you think it would take for me to earn your respect? Many times, parents or school authorities will ask me to speak to a child or teen about an issue on which the adult has demanded respect and gotten nowhere. The adult is often amazed at the positive results of my conversation with the kid. How did you do it? What did you say? There is no magic in what I may have said, but there is a kind of magic in the approach I use in relationships, and consequently in how that causes the teen and I to discuss a given topic. And that approach isn't, "Hey, could you just do what they want this once so I can look good?" I believe that respect doesn't only aim upward. It is a partnership. Each person respects the other by listening, explaining, keeping the relationship and not the issue in focus. In all my years of teaching, I never had to send someone out of the room or threaten them in order to elicit good behavior. Nor was I a pushover. Students learned. They even liked to learn. Because I respected them, they respected me. For many people, this shift in thinking and approach will seem like letting go of an ace up the sleeve. It will feel like a loss of power, handing it over to another person. But remember that the quote-unquote power of demanding respect is only ever an illusion. In reality, working toward earning mutual respect gives power to the relationship, and that is real power that will work for everyone. By the way, after many years and a lot of growth on both our parts, that English teacher and I are now good friends who laugh and shake our heads about those days.